You're listening to The Album Show on One World Radio, and this week we have something completely different, to coin a phrase. We don't have a single album, we have a trio, three albums all in one go, and all from Issadar. So settle back and listen to The Albums Show on OWR. Issadar's musical journey always seemed to be a long one. His first album aired in 1990. And he went through the world of music in the early days, through the 80s, and right up to that period of 90. He was a big fan of Kate Bush and others as well, as you'll hear.
I come from a musical family and grew up in a very small rural town in South Louisiana, about 200 miles west of New Orleans. Both of my older brothers and my mother play the piano. I came along, and music was already being made in our home before I had a language to communicate with and was playing the piano by ear as a toddler. I finally began formal music studies when I was 5 years old. I segued into woodwinds for school band, adding trumpet, flute, piccolo, and finally the oboe to my arsenal of instruments over the next decade. I began the craft of songwriting when I was 16 years old, and due to the complexity and expense of recording technology and synthesizers back then, I could only put together my ideas using an acoustic piano, my memory, and my imagination. Initially, I was inspired by the electronic pop music from the 1980s, mostly British-influenced. Human League, Thomas Dolby, The Eurythmics, Johnny Hates Jazz, The Dream Academy, ABC, Depeche Mode, Peter Gabriel, and finally Kate Bush. I actually could speak about Kate at length, but there isn't enough time in your show to say what I really want to say about her, and what I think of her as an artist, and particularly as a genius record producer. I will say that she is virtually unknown in the United States, and only a very small audience even knows who she is. Her music has never been aired on commercial radio, and only glimpses of it has appeared long ago on alternative college markets in large cities. I think that's a crime, honestly. I can't imagine my life without the soundtrack of her music, as it has enriched me profoundly. I had the honor and pleasure of meeting her in 1993 when she was in New York promoting her album The Red Shoes. I never had a strong desire to perform. I think that had a lot to do with my relationship with music as a child. It was always experienced from critical listening to recordings, as opposed to hearing live performances by musicians inside a venue. When I did attend live shows, it always disappointed me, as I expected the same perfection I came to enjoy from my record collection. In the late 1980s, it was incredibly expensive to record inside professional studios, and most of the studios located in Louisiana were inferior to what was being used by the artists that were signed and recording for major labels. It was a closed system back then, and the music industry at the time was only open to the anointed ones, which clearly I was not. But songwriting and recording was my one and only passion, and I continued to follow that path as often and as much as I could. During the years of 1987 through 1990, I was attending university and working on my first album during the time off from studies. I was writing, producing, and performing a vocal project, multi-tracking it as a one-man band of sorts, and it was called Dream of the Dead. It was strongly influenced by the sounds I had heard by accident when I was 15 years old on Kate Bush's album, The Dreaming. How I came to hear about her was that a college friend of my older brother's gave him a copy of her album for his birthday. He played Suspended in Gaffa for me, and I remember vividly thinking how much the arrangement sounded a bit like Dexy's Come On Eileen. That was the only reference that came anywhere close to Kate's style that I had a reference to at that time. I didn't give it much more thought other than the cover photograph of the LP, which really haunted me. A few weeks later, I went back to the LP and tried to find the song my brother played for me, but I was having difficulty, and boy, was I in for a major shock. My mind was absolutely blown and fried by what I discovered and uncovered. Never had I heard anything like it prior, and I can honestly say, 30 years later, I've never heard anything like it since. I found the record completely raw, and it was, to me, and is still the most unique sound recording, in my opinion, that has ever been made. That was 1983, and it took me several years to digest this album, along with going back to discover and digest her earlier works, in time for Hounds of Love to get released. However, I think if I would have come on board earlier with Kate's music, it would not nearly have had the same impact on me. For the dreaming, she was at the helm of the production, at full throttle, and at the peak of her skill level from every aspect, and it just left me breathless, honestly. Although I do still find her earlier work somewhat interesting, particularly her incredibly dense and complex background vocal arrangements, which unfortunately have made an appearance less and less as her career moves forward, much to my dismay. To me, that was her signature sound, like, for example, in a track she did called Night Senate Stock. She's really a master at not only layering the different vocal parts, but having this strange sensibility to have them all extremely cohesive. At the same time, and through her music, I also discovered and began to research a new Australian manufactured instrument called the Fairlight CMI, which also influenced me greatly in my own work. I eventually acquired my own CMI through Herbie Hancock's producer, Bill Laswell, back in 1998. It's a super rare instrument and was insanely expensive when it was sold in the 1980s. Only 300 of them were manufactured throughout the world due to their high-end price tag. Only major studios and a few successful pop stars could actually afford to buy one. While I was recording Dream of the Dead, I used to listen to my progress on tape while commuting home. But one night I was totally burnt out on working and needed to give my ears a rest, so I ejected the tape and put the radio on NPR, which I think is the UK's equivalent to Radio 4. Not 100% sure about that, but I think it's pretty close. But they would break occasionally to the local affiliates and broadcast music, including the syndicated shows Hearts of Space and a few other New Age music shows, which was really a new genre at that time. This particular night, they were playing music from Windham Hill Records, a record label I was really unfamiliar with at the time, as they were relatively new, as well as the genre itself. During the broadcast, I heard the most beautiful piece of piano music ever. It was Liz Story performing her special arrangement of Greensleeves. I was completely captivated. I seriously had never heard a piano played like that before. It was magical and dreamlike, and the effects on the recording itself were also quite stunning and unique. Well, I raced home in order to call the radio station to find out what they were playing. And of course, I went out the next day and bought the CD and then began to dive into the music of Liz Story and her albums that were available at that time. My multi-tracked vocal album, Dream of the Dead, nearly bankrupted me and was eating up all my funds made from part-time and flex-time jobs between studies. During this time, I was also beginning to compose music that I found really impossible to add lyrics and melody to the arrangement. Because I had been exposed to the new sound of Windham Hill and Liz Story in particular, I wasn't too bothered by that dilemma, and I simply just accepted these compositions in their raw state to be just that, you know, solo piano works. It gave me an alternative, gave me a license to do that in some way. Due to the expenses I accumulated from Dream of the Dead, I decided to put the project on hold until I could better afford the budget needed to complete it properly, and turned my focus over to the simplicity of these solo piano works and recorded my debut album in the summer of 1990, and it came out in October of the same year. Dream of the Dead had about 7 more years to wait until its completion and release back in 1997.
To release 3 albums in 9 months is quite incredible. Here, Isidar tells us about that journey through those months, the emotions, the stresses, strains, and the inspirations.
To release 3 albums in 9 months is absolutely insane. But it honestly had to be done in order to have the impact I desired from the investment I made towards a promotional campaign. I really wasn't ready to release my 2 new albums on an emotional level this past year, but because Will Ackerman presented his offer to me and we subsequently collaborated and finished a brand new record, it sort of forced everything else to come together. I really didn't have a choice with the amount of money I was investing, and I didn't want to miss out on any of the opportunities coming out of a, lack of a better term, a 1-2-3 punch effort. So I took the task in hand and really focused on my goal and made it work and made the 2 albums come together in order to meet the timeline. Otherwise, I think I'd still be piddling around with the album, still unfinished at this point. Thank you.
With 6 solo piano albums dating back to 1990, Isidar brought us the release Reconstructed. Here he tells us how that album came to be, the ideas behind it, and some of the interesting stories from the tracks upon it.
Reconstructed is a brand new album that takes special and selected tracks from my prior 6 solo piano albums going back to 1990. The compositions get reworked and re-recorded, some drastically, some only subtle changes. The project came to be really as an excuse to work with producer Will Ackerman, the founder of Windham Hill Records. Will had reached out to me directly last year and offered to produce a new solo piano record with me at his studio in Vermont. He heard about me through the videos I had posted on YouTube and my cover versions of Liz Story's work. At the time he reached out to me, I was knee-deep in recording a brand new album called Red, which is my latest and was released last month. And a new Christmas album as well, called Oh Christmas, which was released this past October. I couldn't justify starting the 2 new projects over with Will, so I proposed this rework project instead, and Will liked the idea very much. My intention was using the album we made together as a sort of launching pad for a very long and elaborate promotional campaign, which I'd honestly never done before in any length or capacity, which is why you've most likely never heard of my work until now. This is also why all 3 albums were released in quick succession, only 4 months apart. My intent was to build on each opportunity, yet have them all cross-promote each other in a sort of short, small window of time so as not to get forgotten. One of the tracks from Reconstructed is a summary of an entire improvisational album I released back in 2003 called The Purple Heart. It was a 56-minute live studio recording, and Will really liked some of the themes that unfolded in the album, so I tried to recreate these in a 5-minute summary. The album was a memorial to the victims of 9/11, and the summary on Reconstructed definitely carries on that legacy. It's a very special, condensed slice of the album for me. Another special track is a radical piano version of a vocal song I recorded called The Bermuda Triangle. The song originally came off my 2006 album called Private Property. Subsequently, I filmed a music video for the track, but when Will set out to pick the songs we were going to work on for the album, he heard a stripped-down piano solo remix that was included as a bonus track on a 2006 compilation album I put out called Scratching the Surface. Since I never intended to make this song as a piano solo, I originally resisted Will's insistence on its inclusion. I also felt doing it again would somehow diminish the value of the remix version that appeared on the compilation. But I took a lot of liberties with the new arrangement and changed the structure a bit to create yet another very unique interpretation of the song that we were both very happy with in the end. Thank you.
The genius of Will Ackerman has touched many musicians' lives in their time. Here's a star telling us about working with Will and his experiences.
Working with Will was a great experience. He has this gift of telling you exactly what you need to know when you need to hear it. That, to me, was him at his best. And do you have any idea how hard it is to restrain from disclosing that kind of vital information? Although he knew what he needed to say and tell me all along, he just waited until the precise moment to communicate it to me. I think he can sense when the musician is the most vulnerable and open to the information. To me, that's his genius and his gift in the process. Will also works very hard and intensely. I was a bit worried stepping into the sessions with him because that's honestly how I work, and I wasn't sure he would or could match my intensity and work speed ethic. I generally work alone, so bringing Will and his engineer Tom Eaton into the process was a challenge for me, but we were all able to work together as a well-oiled machine. Will has a specific way of recording, which also threw me for a loop initially, mainly because my approach is highly improvisational. Never shall I repeat myself is generally my motto. But by the end of the first session, we were all very much intuitively working off of each other, and it couldn't have been sweeter, really. Despite the challenges, we recorded 16 compositions in 3 days. That's insane. Will claims we broke all records that week for his entire career. Thank you.
So here we are again. Snow has fallen on the ground. It's that familiar time of year. And another Christmas album, but this time with a difference. Here Isadar talks about O Christmas.
My Christmas album, O Christmas, has 10 original arrangements of traditional Christmas music. This was my second solo piano Christmas album. The first one was called In Search for the Meaning of Christmas, and it was released in 1999. Like the first album, my intent was to find unusual and not so familiar Christmas repertoire. On the second album, I mined even deeper in trying to obtain that goal. For example, I included a Puerto Rican traditional carol called Song of the Wise Men, and a very masculine percussive version of Masters in This Hall. I also included a new take on my original homage to Liz Story. It's a new version of Greensleeves, and was inspired by her brilliant take of that work. To me, it's an uninhibited, very lush arrangement set in an equally lush aural environment, and creates a great segue to my track Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. This one closes the album and has some of the best moments and highlights, the most creative liberties and creative licenses taken on the entire record. Thank you.
Imagine an album that takes 7 years to produce, that has 7 tracks upon it. Here Isidar tells us about that album. Red.
My new album Red, like O Christmas, took 7 years to produce. It only has 7 songs on it, but some of them are quite lengthy. One surpasses 8 minutes. But the reason for the time involved in its production was more related to just life in general. I moved out west to California, then I moved back east again to New York City. During that time, not to mention producing and directing over 75 music videos for my vocal projects during the same time frame. So basically, I just had a lot of irons on the fire simultaneously. I also wrote about 25 compositions for this album, but only included the really special pieces that I felt were unique and didn't sound too much like my previous work. I wanted something very fresh and not to repeat what I've already done. The album follows a bittersweet theme, love theme, and follows the up and down affairs of the heart and the family. The piece, The Man Who Broke My Heart, seems to confuse those who hear it, but the play on words really was intentional on my part. I didn't want to be so transparent. Many assume it's about a romantic gesture, but it's very far removed from that, from my perspective. The emotions behind this piece are coming directly from the perspective of a young toddler, and of course the man, that being his father. I think we all experience that moment as a toddler when our fathers show us the true authoritative figure. And depending upon the circumstances and the manner in which it unfolds, it can be quite devastating and heartbreaking to the child. I experienced this firsthand with my own father at the age of 4. And honestly, our relationship was permanently damaged and was never the same again, despite him passing in 2004. This piece pulls directly from that experience and those emotions. On Facing the Mirror, Facing the Mirror, is probably the most unique piano piece I've ever composed. I experimented with harmonies, structure, meter, and rhythm that I haven't ventured into before. It was also a case where the music literally felt like it was falling out of my fingers. At times I could almost feel my fingers being pushed to certain notes that I would never normally consider. It was totally freaky and bizarre. It's felt like another voice was at work at the time I was composing the music, almost like I didn't have a say into what was being brought to life, but was only the facilitator. I never have felt such a strong voice move through me as I did then, and I most certainly never felt my fingers being pushed around like that before. That was definitely a first. This is, hands down, one of my favorite piano pieces I've recorded so far, and I couldn't be more proud of it, even though I was clear, even though I was clearly only the facilitator. Thank you.
So, three albums in 9 months. The last album being Red. Would Issa Dae be releasing anything else? We asked, in 2013. Would there be any notable dates, events, or gigs? What next for Issa Dae?
I have nothing planned at the moment. If Pass can predict the future, I'd say that I'll probably segue back to my vocal music next. I do have a new project in mind, but I also have a remastering job to finish relating to my 2005 album called Lessons in Love. It's a very huge project. It was a 3-disc album, and it was recorded very, very quickly, and I want to go back and take my time with it and fine-tune everything and make it a little tighter and bring it up to the level of my other vocal albums. If I have a choice, I'll probably finish up those loose ends before starting something totally new. Thank you.
We would like to thank Isidar for his time and for this interview with One World Radio. Isidar wanted to pass on a message to his fans and you, the OWR universe.
I'd just like to say thanks to those who are open to listening to my music and hearing my voice. I believe it's coming from a very real and genuine place, and hopefully people can intuitively pick that up and cherish that aspect in the least. I'd also like to thank Steve and Chrissy for having me on One World Radio. I appreciate it very much.
So another album show is complete, and here Isidar will now give you details of how you can get hold of his music, any social media or website addresses that you may wish to investigate in further, and the artist Isidar. We're at One World Radio. Thank you for listening once again to the album show.
The best place to get a better understanding of what I do and who I am is at my website, isidar.com. That's isadar.com. It's a hub of information and provides access to all my social media purchasing options for my music and my videos. And I like hearing from people, and I'm reachable at isidar@isidar.com. Thank you.
The three albums featured on tonight's album show with Isidar were Reconstructed, O Christmas, and Red. We finish tonight's show with an appropriate track from the album Reconstructed, titled End of the Line. Thank you.
If you're a musician and you'd like your album featured on the album show, then please contact us at One World Radio via Steve or Chrissy at oneworldradio.org.uk.